You're listening to a podcast from 702.
You're with Clement Maniatella.
702.
So let's focus a little bit on Eskom now. There are high-level discussions taking place in government on how to respond to this crisis. But the thing is, this has been said before, right? You've got business now and labor putting pressure on government to do something and do it quickly to respond to the Eskom crisis. But they've said this before. Every time we've gotten even to stage four load shedding, business labor has come and said, but government, how are you responding to this? And I don't think government has responded to the gravity of this electricity crisis. I don't think it's showing any urgency to deal with this crisis. Eskom said this morning that overnight they have replenished their emergency reserves sufficiently to not require stage six load shedding during the morning, but stage six load shedding will be implemented from 4 p.m. until 10 p.m. Tonight, because they don't want to deplete these reserves any further. And there's going to be a meeting, my understanding is this morning, between Eskom and trade unions to discuss that deal that Eskom has made to the unions, and hopefully that's going to help end the strike, which is contributing, according to Eskom, to where things are now. Let's start this conversation with Kanki Matabane, who is the chief executive at the Black Business Council. Kanki, thank you for making time. Good morning.
Good morning, Clement, and the 702 listeners.
So what is it that government needs to do now, immediately, to deal with what we're experiencing now?
Clement, you will know that any CEO that cannot turn around the company in 2 years to 3 years is not worth to be a CEO. Because remember, some of the CEOs get appointed for five-year contracts. So if someone has not done much in 2.5 years, they shouldn't be there. Because when you are brought as a CEO to bring a turnaround, there must be actions. Remember when the CEO of Eskom was appointed, we welcomed that appointment because we wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt. And he said to South Africans, give me 18 months. In these 18 months, you'll experience load shedding, but after 18 months, things will get better, which is a typical period that is usually given for a CEO to start making changes. But when we check, since the appointment, things have gotten worse. We've been on stage four even before the strike. So the problem is that the CEO, instead of solving the problem, is forever on TV and giving excuses. When you're a CEO and then you are paid to do your job, you can't be spending all your time giving excuses, blaming state capture, blaming this and blaming that, blaming the strike, blaming this and coming with the images that you may have taken from the internet that there's a sabotage.
Wait, are you doubting, Kanki, that there was sabotage?
They may or they may not have been, but all the companies in South Africa or all over the world, they are facing one or the other risks, and they mitigate those risks. It's part of the job of the CEO to mitigate against the risk, but you still have to perform. Look at the SARS commissioner. The SARS commissioner got in there, had the similar challenges of state capture, but he focuses on moving forward instead of focusing on the predecessors.
Yeah, but to be fair, those are completely two different entities, and the challenges that they're facing are completely different. So Edward Kizveta may have been able to turn around SARS from the period of state capture and chart the new way forward. That's going to be completely different at Eskom. And I'm not saying that a lot shouldn't have happened so far. I'm just saying these are apples and bananas. If you are saying that get rid of the CEO because he's failed to do something tangible in the last, what, 3 or so years that he's been appointed, what happens then? Let's say you get rid of Andre Dereta, you bring in somebody else. The reality is there are historical maintenance issues that are a big contributing factor to us experiencing load shedding now. So even that new CEO has to deal with that.
Yes, but if you get a competent CEO, they will be able to in 18 months, they will be able to bring some changes. Remember, the rate even when where he comes from, Nampeg and Sasol, he has failed. So this is a continuation of the failure that he brought. And then hence what we're saying to the president Ramaphosa is risking his own legacy by keeping the rate there, because he's going to be known as the president who had the highest unemployment rate, who had the highest youth unemployment rate, who had the lowest economic recovery or economic growth, who has the highest blackouts in the country or in the history of South Africa. So it's up to the president to salvage his legacy by taking action.
Okay, so take action against Andre Dareita, but keep the Eskom board and keep the Minister of Public Enterprises.
No. It's up to him. If he thinks the board is
oh, but what do you think? As the Black Business Council, you think Andre Dareita must go. What do you think about the board? So keep the board and the Public Enterprises Minister, but let the CEO leave?
No, not let the board. The board also lacks the deep understanding of Eskom and the deep skills that are needed for people who are overseeing Eskom. So the board has not done itself any favor. They're supposed to hold Andre Dareita accountable, but instead they are forever defending him. So they should also go, because they have not done their job.
And the minister?
I think the minister is a political thing. I don't think the minister, whether the minister is there or not, it makes any difference. The difference can be made by the board, who must be consisting of engineers and the CEO. The CEO must also probably be an engineer, because you can't get someone who doesn't understand the basics of electricity.
Well,
it's going to take them a long time before they understand what needs to be done.
Well, ministers also play an important role, that political oversight. In the context of Eskom, you've got it now running at 8 board members as opposed to 15. It's the minister who appoints the board members. And Pravin Gordhan has been failing to replace board members that have left over the last, 3 years or so. So you have to make an argument about political oversight and whether that responsibility has been executed efficiently. Because those skills you're talking about that are needed in the board, it's the minister's responsibility to make sure that he appoints board members that have got those skills, and the board actually executes its responsibility over the management, and it's got enough board members. But that's not the situation we've seen. Let me quickly ask Khanki about your solutions, because it's very easy for us to point fingers and say, this one must go, this one must come in. But as the Black Business Council, what actual practical solutions do you have that government can take now to resolve the Eskom crisis?
Yeah, the solution is to bring people there who are skilled, people who understand electricity generation, people who understand maintenance, and people who will then say, because South Africa, we are very, very patient. If someone comes there who knows what they are doing and say, in 18 months' time, this problem will be less than the way it is now, We South Africans will always give the people the benefit of the doubt. But unless and until you bring a competent leadership, we're not going to get anywhere. It happens all over the world. In all companies, it's the leadership that drives performance. If the leadership doesn't have a vision, the entire company will be in disarray, because everyone will be pulling at their own direction.
All right. Khanki Matabane, Chief Executive at the Black Business Council, thank you for making time. Happy Kambule is the Energy and Environment Manager at the Business Unity South Africa. Happy, thank you so much for also making time. Do you agree with the Black Business Council that what Eskom needs right now is competent leadership? Because I can think about many other things that need to be resolved, things like regulatory processes, where there are just lots of bottlenecks.
Good morning to you, and good morning to all the listeners. I agree with the Black Business Council in this regard, because to be honest, we know what the problems are, and they're not necessarily only of a technical nature. Many of them are political in nature. Many of them are legislative and regulatory, as you have indicated, but also there's a lot of legacy patronage networks that are still there that are undermining the current work that the leadership in ESCOM is undertaking. And we've already heard numerous times of acts of sabotage and maladministration in regards to the maintenance work that is being done at ESCOM. So I think it's not really about the leadership. It's really that as a collective, are we able to put in place the necessary measures and means to make sure that the work of the leadership is supported and is carried through?
So there are some that have asked that there must be some kind of an emergency council that is put in place. So you have this council that is going to look at even the regulations that are becoming a problem, because another hindrance is that just progress towards energy security. There are also concerns with energy regulator NERSA when it comes to companies applying to build plans to generate up to 100 megawatts. So should government have a situation where there's an emergency council that has these emergency powers to suspend or maybe suspend laws or even gazette new regulations to deal with this crisis?
I think the conversation around the state of emergency or disaster should be taken with a whole lot more nuance, because what we'll be effectively doing is adding a new layer of bureaucracy on top of what is already there. Because setting it up is not going to be easy, and providing it with the necessary powers is not going to be easy. We already have structures such as Operations Within Data, which looks at the areas of growth and investment that should be prioritized and unlocked. And then we've got the areas of red tape, which the team of the red tape unit under Sipongosi are supposed to be looking at to ensure that the areas around, let's say, electricity reform are then tackled. So it should be, if it is going to be done and if it is something that is gaining momentum, then it should be taken with a lot of nuance and a lot of salt, because we'll be creating another edit structure, including on top of that, we'll have to set up the regulatory framework for it to be able to work in order for it not to have powers that are too overriding. And in the context that we're in right now, I think we still have issues of confidence that are there, because people see one thing, that there is no power, but there is aspects of that the power is available, or the power that is available is not being connected to the grid, which is a totally different issue compared to there not being power at all. Then we've got a consequence where there are machinery and equipment which is falling apart, and when it is necessary for it to be maintained, we have issues of national strikes or unprotected strikes, which is illegal in its own way. And at the same time, you're having situations where there's criminal behavior that is occurring, which is not necessarily something that can be tackled with emergency powers, right? Emergency powers would be because it's a crisis and it's at least a simple thing to act on, maybe largely that it is a technical issue. But these things are more than just a technical issue. It concerns more than just the power stations, how they work. It's also about the political economy around the power stations, the relationship with the workers, and the other issues around non-payment.
So even if regulatory processes are, let's say, short-circuited and public procurement is expanded, it will still take about 18 months to 2 years before new projects are built and ready to deliver power. What happens in the meantime?
Well, actually, there are power stations which have licensing conditions attached to them that give them a cap on the power that they can produce for the electricity grid, well, for ESCOM to also evacuate around the country. So there are ready turnkey solutions that are there that can be used, right? So a power station, for example, has, let's say, a limitation of 100 megawatts. It can actually produce 150. Right, so you can still get a 50 more megawatts onto the grid, which is available, but that's linked to the licensing condition that is there. That's one of the areas that can be unlocked. And then secondly, even in the short term, within the next 6 months, there are a number of projects that can be rolled out, which are more distributed in nature and can then feed into the grid. But in the midterm, definitely, a lot of projects are going to come online as soon as we are able to use the land around power around transmission lines, which is quite key, because that's where a lot of value can be unlocked.
Okay, what's your view as BUSA on the management of ESCOM? Because you've got to ask what the Black Business Council, the point that they're making is, if you are a CEO of any company and you come in, they assess your performance over a 2-year or 3-year period. So as Busa, when you look at Andre Darreta's performance over 3 years, are you satisfied or has he failed?
I think I'm more than satisfied with the fact that this last year, in the last financial year, Eskom for the first time in about a decade recorded a positive return on income, even with load shedding, right? And we've seen circumstances and instances where things are beyond the leadership of Eskom's control, where, for example, last year in COP26, when the CEO went to COP26 to try to pen that partnership, as he was penning that partnership, there was those phase 6 load shedding in the country because of a malicious nature. So that's got nothing to do with actually the performance of the team and the individual. Mm. It's really that there are individuals within the company, with around the utility that are unhappy maybe with the person itself, but also the direction in which the organization is going, and are sabotaging the organization and the country as well.
So yes, you may want to argue that in terms of income and what Eskom has been able to generate, you are satisfied. Eskom has been able to reduce debt. It's now below 4 billion rand, if I'm not mistaken. They have started this process of unbundling the utility. But when it comes to dealing specifically with load shedding, are you satisfied?
Well, of course not. Of course, the material implications of load shedding have been felt across the board. Businesses are feeling it. And yes, that needs to be addressed. But as I said to you, there's an aspect of this which has to deal with us as a collective, or not only just the leadership. The leadership is trying to do as best as it can, but if it's not supported in its fullest, then we are going to have the same situation. And I think Khanti from BBC said it as well, is that it doesn't matter if you're going to have legacy maintenance issues, and then a person comes in and says it's going to be 18 months or 2 years. If those things are of a nature that they're going to be far deeper than what you perceive, you're going to stay with those things. So this is one of those issues where we've had a situation where in the previous administration or in the previous leadership, we ran the plant flat out and everybody was happy that there's no load shedding. Mm. But there's a consequence to that. But then on top of that, the patronage networks and those who are unhappy, including the fact that we're not paying for services, and the ability for us to keep lights on is creating a negative confidence.
Yeah.
They're trying their best. We should be supporting them as much as possible to address the current crisis. After the crisis, and I think when we get to a point where we are dealing with the crisis and we feel that we're more comfortable with the energy availability factor that the country needs, we then take a step and say, okay, let's inquire about what is really going on. Because there's a lot of things that we already know are going on, but there's a lot more that we can uncover.
So here's my problem, Happy, right? Here's the problem I have with whether it's the board or the management or the minister, is that they're not telling us what the plan is. We are experiencing load shedding and we don't know what their plan is. So according to their plan, when do they think they will be able to at least stop this risk of power cuts? And I'm not getting that. And if you are getting that, please help me understand. Because I've interviewed the board chairperson who said, we've got a plan. And I said, okay, what does that plan say about how long this is going to continue? Because investors want to know. South Africans want to know. He was not able to tell me the plan. I've interviewed the CEO of Eskom. I've interviewed the public enterprises minister. I'm not getting that. And I suspect that the reason, partly, whether directly or indirectly, could be that they're scared that even if they tell us how they are running maintenance and when they think the risk of load shedding will end, then we're going to come back and hold them accountable and said, you said in 2 years, but you failed to do it. So do you know, as Busa, what the plan is and when load shedding is going to end as a result of that plan?
Well, that's something I cannot say with certainty what the plan is in terms of the timeline. What I can say is that we had been given an 18-month timeline, if you remember, when the current CEO started, and we were working in, actually, we were going in the right direction, but seemingly things got worse. And I think it's fair enough that we should be calling for a timeline and we should be calling for more details, and I fully agree with that. But I think we need to be sensitive to the fact that every time a plan is communicated, there are acts of trying to undermine that actively.
All right. Happy Kambule, Energy and Environmental Manager at the Business Unity South Africa. Thank you for making time. Nsiki, you're calling from Soweto. What do you want to say?
Yes, good morning. Good morning, Chairman.
Sure.
Actually, I'm not sure. I'm quite sure this guy is not coming from ANC or from government. That's what I wanted
Who's,
to... I wanted
who to are you talking about, Nsiki?
The
Black Business Council guy.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I'm blaming the comrades. Chairman, I'm blaming the comrades.
Hmm.
Who happened to tell people not to pay for electricity, not to pay? Where can they see any business who not generate a revenue to I mean, angry man. Eskom not generate any revenue. They're expecting this to run Eskom efficiently.
All right. Tsiki in Soweto, got you.
Clement, good morning. Durata has failed dismally, and you cannot have somebody who keep on blaming this and that, the blame game, that's what he's playing with every time. No sabotage. The first thing he said when he came in, no sabotage. Until three years, Clement, the guy failed. He's just failing. They must remove him. Roland.
Regarding the Eskom and load shedding issue and with the Black Business Council comments, André de Ruyter is not incompetent. It is time that we stop looking at what the person in charge looks like and we start looking at who has the best idea to fix our problems. This is not a black or a white issue. It is a country in dire straits issue. That is just my opinion.
Clement, I'm listening to this guy from the, you said BBC or something. I think he's just, he doesn't understand the magnitude of the problem because his comments are just not helping us at all. And he's ignoring the blatant issues of sabotage, the issues that are sucking money from every SOE of the procurement department that is actually sucking money. There's nothing that you can fix without money. I mean, if at all he needs to come and give opinions, he must give a holistic opinion, not just an opinion that is one-sided, you know, and that serves personal ambitions.
Let's walk the talk.
This is Clemens Maniatella
on 702.
25 minutes before 11 o'clock, I'm taking your calls now on 011-883-0702. I want to know, what is it that you miss about your childhood? I want us to reminisce about our childhood. What are the things you miss about your childhood? Obviously, no bills, no adulting responsibility. I was saying earlier that I miss what we used to do when we used to borrow each other clothes. And I don't know if that still happens today or if adults are comfortable with that. Huh? Does it still happen? I miss that. I used to say to your friend, hey, because you had a date or checka. We didn't have dates, never checka fell. And how your checker, when you used to, checker, it's like to go and see someone you're in a relationship with. And you stand outside their home and you whistle and they come out. And yeah, you chat there in the corner. Then they lied to their parents that, oh no, I'm going to the shop to buy airtime. That's basically, in a nutshell, what to checker is. So I miss and you used to say to your friend, oh, please borrow me your Nike shocks or borrow me, you know, that T-shirt. And it was a normal thing. It was cool. But these days, I'm assuming people are so judgmental. Eh? Sia was saying that he misses not being exposed to urban life. He misses the rural lifestyle. I don't know if I miss that. I don't know. Things have become much easier now. And I'm very comfortable with that. And then here's what I really miss the most. Mantlwani. Eh? Mantlwani is, in English, playing house. So we used to play mantlwani a lot when we were children. And I remember we used to steal food. Like, one will bring tomatoes, the other will bring, like, just one potato. And then we used to get these tin fish cans and sticks to cook. Huh? That was, now that I think about it now, I'm like, how did we not die from the dead and from the germs? I mean, we were cooking with like old tin fish cans. And we'll make the fire and make pap and then just mix up like tomato with the potato, you know. And then we used to have different households, and there would be households that had the best food, you know. You know, there were kids who were coming from really privileged families, and they would bring in some meat as well, maybe like 2 pieces of chicken. And then we used to fight to be the father. Eh? Remember, you used to fight to play the role of the father for many different reasons, because, you know, at the time, as the father, for some reason, you decide which cars are driven or how many cars we have. But one of the things I enjoyed the most is about Mantlwane, playing houses. It allowed your imagination to go wild. So you could have a house that has 5 bedrooms, but it's imaginary. You are the rich family that has 2 cars. Whatever roles you're playing. Do you remember that? Did you guys play Mantlwane? Did you play house? How was it? So that's one of the things that I completely, completely miss. So I want to know from you on 011-883-0702. WhatsApp voice notes as well on 072-702-1702. Mix, you're calling from Edenvale. Hi.
Hi there. Hi, Clement.
Sure.
When you guys were asking what is the one thing or a couple of things that we miss as children? And being able to go down to Durban with your family.
Mm.
And number 2, being able to walk in the streets after dark.
Yeah.
Like I still remember my bedtime or my time to be home was when the street lights come on. You had to be home. You can't do that nowadays.
Yeah, you can't. You can't. And it used to take a village to raise a child. Not anymore. Like, I'm sorry, I'm uncomfortable with the village raising my child because things are just messy now. You cannot trust anyone. So I get what you're saying there, Mix. Thank you so much for calling. This guy on Renee on Twitter says, I miss electricity. And then on the WhatsApp line, someone says, I miss climbing our giant avocado tree and eating butter. Oh, what? Beating better. I think you mean better avocados that were free and didn't cost 30 rand each. Amy, you are right. How much is an avocado now? My goodness. Lesego, you're in Pretoria. Good morning.
Good morning, Clement. I miss playing outside. Our neighbor had a tree of, is it blackberries or blueberries? Murbeila.
Oh, Murbeila.
I know that.
Yes.
Yo, and you go home, your feet would be so dark underneath. Today, look how much we're paying for Murbeila and for Nebunate. I mean, these are stuff that I grew up to. But Clement, on the Mantlwane sector, I think Vulela Maka, you like being the daddy for the other things that happened between Supu Liloni. You know, you see that little passage between Supu Liloni. We all know what happened there.
Why don't expose Alessio? Okay, we were children, okay, and we were naughty, obviously, and we know better now. But I mean, there was a time when you were attracted to your neighbor and you're like, and the neighbor decides, I'm the mother. You're like, okay, I'll play the dad in that case. But it was fun. It was fun. The nice thing also is it happened in public, and I don't know how it happened in other settings. Like where I come from in our villages, we used to just draw like on the ground, like that's the bedroom. So that's the kitchen, that's this and that. And I'm assuming like for people who have better resources, like you actually did you play in an actual house? Like, are there people who played house like in an actual house? Huh? I don't know. But we used to just draw on the floor. That's what we did. And yes, you're right. It happened when you were young. Yeah. And then that neighbor who wanted to play mom and you were quick to raise your hand to to pronounce yourself as playing dad. What else do you miss? I asked my brother this morning what he misses, and he says he misses being a golden learner because he was very smart in high school. He used to be part of the top 10 I've been part of the top 10 too throughout my high school, but I used to be like number 8 of the best performing students. But he used to be like number 2, number 1, number 3. And he says he misses that because when he got to varsity, ish got real, right? Do you miss that? One of the things I miss is being a cheese boy. So where I come from in the village, if you have a kavela, please Google what a kavela is if you don't know a kavela. Kavela used to cost 1,000 rand. So it was a big thing in the township and in the village that, yo, if you have a kavela and you have a gold tooth, you are the cheese boy. And I was the cheese boy because I had the gold tooth. Was it L or U? So there were different letters you could put. I had the U. No, my brother had the U. I had the L. I had the L gold tooth. Oh, that's one part about my life that I wish didn't exist because it's so bloody embarrassing. Zebedia, you calling from the Johannesburg CBD. Good morning.
Hello, how are you, Clement?
Kim Nat, how are you doing?
I miss Christmas, my brother.
Where Christmas clothes.
With jam, and there were plates reserved for Christmas, there were cups reserved for Christmas. It was just nice, man.
Yeah, and the clothes, did you guys have Christmas clothes as well?
Yes. Oh, you like, to this day, the thing that I like to eat, man, is the thing that we would eat during those Christmas days. So, like, biscuits, the coke.
Oh, that is so cool. The custard. Oh, yeah. Zebedia, thank you. Christmas. I missed the Christmas clothes. Oh, but there were years, and I'm sure this is applicable to many other people. There were years when my parents didn't have money to buy us Christmas clothes. And, when we were children at the time, it was one of the most difficult years. We didn't look forward to Christmas because they didn't buy us the Christmas clothes. One of the things I miss, actually, I'd forgotten about is custard. You know, when you cook custard, what do you call that thing at the bottom when you cook custard? You know, when it gets